Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for the Linemark Technical Net. It's been going strong for 45-odd years. Every Sunday night around 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios, and we chat with each other, and we teach each other, and we learn from each other, and hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. As always, let me drop for a second, and I'll come back, and I'll give you the usual link. If you would like to reach me via email, one of my many email addresses that I look at regularly is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, that's mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you would like to contact Paul, WS2N, to give him some information about some space or NASA-related story that you read and you'd like him to take a look at it and give his opinion, his email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. As always, every week I collect a bunch of links to YouTube and articles and all kinds of interesting stuff. And I put it up on a link page and keep it there for the indefinite long term. The address to get to it, just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. And that'll bring you the link page for the last few weeks with this week's on the very, very top. We don't have a chat room still. I don't know what's going on with ChatSky. I think they didn't pay their bills, but I don't know. But anyway, we have an audio stream on the Internet. I originally set it up for the technical net, but some people asked me to keep it up the rest of the week. So it's a way of checking on the repeater at Glen Oaks if you don't have a radio on you. You access the audio link by just typing into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you the audio. As always, I like to remind people that Mike's archive site is called amateurradio.tv, and it's our technical net that go as far back as September of 2000. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who've moved out of the area or become a silence over the years, but the wisdom remains frozen in amber on the MP3 files that are accessible that you can download at your leisure. So take advantage of that. Okay, let me drop for a second and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, we have a couple of short stories, nothing dramatic happening on artificial intelligence, but I like to keep you all abreast of the comings and goings of whatever this is. It might be the greatest discovery in mankind. It might be the biggest disaster in mankind. Only time will tell. It's probably going to be someplace in the middle. But we'll see. After that, we will go to our main segment, questions, comments, and topics. I will ask people to hit the push to talk, give me your first name, your call sign, and whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology related. We'd like the first few to be amateur radio, since this is an amateur radio net, but as I've often said, I'm game if you are. If you want to bring up some topic in the sciences or technology, I'll try and get through it as best I can. At the very least, give you some references, and hopefully we'll learn something new together. That should take us approximately to 10:15. Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us approximately to 11 p.m. And I will return then and wish you all a good week. Tie a little bow on everything and put the net to bed. That's my plans, assuming that everything in the shack was working the way it's supposed to, and I'm working the way I'm supposed to, and the repeater is working the way it's supposed to. And I don't get thrown off of All Stars too many times. Usually it's one or two times a night. If I'm very, very lucky, it's towards the end of the night, and so you don't even hear it. But, you know, sometimes it's the very beginning of the night. In those cases, it's a little bit more obvious. Anyway, that's the plan. So I will drop for a second and come back and tell you a couple interesting things about artificial intelligence for this week. Okay, let's see. Google and Meta apparently have become close personal friends, and Google has agreed to allow Meta to use Google's AI chips. Google is one of the few AI companies that produce their own chips. They do not use NVIDIA chips, as far as I'm aware. So they cut a deal with Meta to let them borrow some to train Meta's latest and greatest AI, which is suffering from some delays. Let's see. OpenAI has announced a new iteration of ChatGPT. It's called 5.4. And it's launched earlier this month, so we'll see what amazing things GPT 5.4 is capable of that the earlier iterations weren't. I don't think I would expect too many dramatic differences. I still tend to sense that we're kind of hitting a wall, but you know, some IT people say that, but others IT people don't say that. So who knows? Again, it's one of the many mysteries in life. Let's see. NVIDIA showed off its Vera Rubin platform. This is its next generation of AI chips that will make this present generation, that companies have invested hundreds of billions of dollars in, obsolete. So that's certainly not going to do good things for the economy, but nevertheless. Also, some little other side bits. If you ever wondered what an AI war might look like, according to some people throwing rumors around, you just have to take a look at Iran. Apparently, there's an interesting rumor that China has basically taken DeepSeek and trained it on more warfaring information and is giving Iran access to it. That might explain why Iran is firing on Amazon data sites. Because Amazon data sites are where Claude is processing AI. And even though the Defense Department is angry with Claude, the Defense Department has a bigger contract with Palantir, and Palantir has Claude embedded in it. So probably Claude is giving data to the Defense Department, and China, through Iran, is blowing up their data centers. So this is an indication of what future AI wars might look like, so keep your eye on the ball. Another little strangeness for people into games, NVIDIA announced their latest and greatest routines for gaming. They're supposed to improve the visual experience and make the characters look more lively. It's called DLSS5. Unfortunately, a bunch of gamers have looked at the material and they think that it pushes games right into the uncanny valley, and they really despise it. So, Jensen Pang, the CEO.
You stopped talking on the radio. You were still talking on the Echolink. That's why nobody heard it, but this.
Okay, let's see. According to this, it's gone. Maybe I talk too much. I've been known to talk too much. Anyway, I just let me give you the last few little bits. One is that there might be an AI war taking place in Iran quietly, because there's rumors that China has trained in warfare, and that might explain why Iran he bombed a Amazon data center. I think it was in the UAE or Qatar, because it's that's where Claude is running war games there. Also, there's SS5 algorithm from NVIDIA, which gamers are aware of now. It makes the characters in video games more realistic, but it kind of pushes it in the uncanny valley. So go figure. It looks a little weird. Some people like it, some people don't, but it's another excuse to use AI chips. Matter of fact, I think the demonstration used two, not one, but two of the most expensive video boards available. So I don't know how that translates to regular gamers who I don't think have, $4,000 or $5,000 to pay for just the gaming board and the video board. Anyway, if anyone has any questions or comments about any of the things that I mentioned, feel free to hit that push to talk. Otherwise, we'll move on to the next segment.
Senator Xen, if you don't mind to say a few words about AI open law, which also was called Clawbot or Moldbot or Moldy. It's the newest product of NVIDIA, actually.
Yeah, I talked about that maybe a month ago. It came out. It was open source. It was on GitHub. The OpenAI company contacted. So they're going to incorporate OpenClaw. OpenClaw is an agent as opposed to an AI. AIs are like OpenAI and Grok. They're the actual algorithms that answer the questions or do the things that you ask it to do, at least written and such, or generate pictures or sounds or something. Agents are auxiliary software that interfaces the AI with your websites and other things, so that you can, if you tell, say, I can't do that, hopefully, because that would be the truth. Agents, on the other hand, have stored your credit card number and your address and all kinds of things, and can actually act as an intermediary to create things and do things using AI. It became very exciting. It's very dangerous. OpenClaw has a lot of security holes. And most people are suggesting that don't play around with it, because you can burn yourself. It's very easy if you don't shut down all of the security holes of people and steal your entire wealth. They can empty your bank account and do all kinds of nasty things. So that's OpenClaw. It looks like it has an interesting future. NVIDIA is promoting their own agents. And OpenAI have basically hired the guy who wrote it, and other companies, of course, are announcing agents as well.
A few words. It took over within 3 weeks. So, the video that I sent you says, Jason Hunk says, it is first time in the history of humanity that such application took over within 3 weeks. So, if you don't mind to say a few words about the importance of it.
Well, it's not decided. Again, it's 99.9% hype. It might turn out to be that way, it might not. Jensen Hung has a big investment in selling as many AI chips as possible, especially before they become obsoleted by his next version of AI chips. And so I would take almost anything that these guys say with a grain of salt. The guys who are very, very optimistic about agents, we'll see, like I said before. The problem is that if something goes wrong, it's very possible to go very wrong. The worst that happens with AIs themselves, because they can only act through you or me or us. You know, they could talk you into committing suicide, God forbid. The problem with agents is they now have all your keys to your life, and they have access routes to use them. So, you know, they could bankrupt you in days. And it's been known to happen because they operate using up AI tokens, and AI tokens eventually are not free. There have been cases where the agents have basically emptied people's bank accounts paying for excessive amounts of tokens. So, again, it's a tool slash weapon. It's like a hammer. You can build a house or you can bash in your neighbor's stuff. And it's not quite sure who's going to use it for what. So is it going to be the, you know, kingdom come? No, I don't think so. I'm getting kind of tired of Jensen and the gang announcing that everything is going to revolutionize the universe and you know, bring God down into your computer. I wish they would kind of, put a cap on some of this hyperbole. So, again, there'll be people out there maybe listening and saying, Roy, you're an idiot. You're completely wrong. These guys are brilliant, and they're going to bring us to another world that we can't even imagine. To them, I say, fine, invest all your money and laugh at me in your Lamborghini. But I don't think it's going to quite be like that. Nothing is 100% good or even bad. So, you know, I have my doubts. As the weeks progress and as I tell you more that I understand about what's coming into being, I'll be able to give you a better idea, at least through my eyes. You may not agree with me, but again, that's your right. You're free to agree or completely disagree with anything I say.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Anyone with any other comments before we move on? Okay, we may end up back in AI. It wouldn't be the first time. But for now, let's move on to our main segment, questions, comments, and topics. Once again, I would hope the first few would be amateur radio related. Then we can get into science and or technology. For people with you know, multiple questions or comments or, you know, going to hold for a bit longer than everyone else, to try to kind of position yourself further down the list so that the first few questions are people, because there are people who just have simple questions that take about 5 or 10 minutes, and there are other people who have lists of questions or topics where it could take 45 minutes. And, you know, I don't think it's quite right for the, you know, 5-minute question to have to wait an hour or two to, you know, if we can at all figure out how to make it as efficient as possible. So with all that in mind, if anyone has any questions or comments or topics for tonight, please hit that push to talk and give me your information.
W2BZ.
Okay, Rick, bring it away. Okay, Paul. Okay, Wes. Anyone else?
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf.
Okay, Sam. Anyone else? Okay, Rich, what do you got for us tonight?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody. Well, my MSET half-wave came down in the last snowstorm. When I say came down, it was attached at about 40 feet to a tree and then into my shack. So now I have to get another one up there. I'm going to use that old fishing reel and slingshot method. So my question is this. If I get this wire up over the top of the tree, I have to bring it down again to attach it to the side of the tree. So let's say at the apex it's 40 feet off the ground, but where I attach it to the tree it's 10 feet off the ground. Do I have an antenna at 40 feet or do I have an antenna at 10 feet, if that makes any sense? Go ahead.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Let me ask you an important question. How high up is the input of the antenna, the feed point?
The feed point is down at the other side of the antenna coming out from the tree. The feed point is literally on the ground, or you're talking about the 49? About on the ground, or a couple of feet off the ground.
Okay, it's going to effectively act as it's near the feed point height, because it's not a uniform thing. Usually, in cases of resonant antennas, the far distance, the end of radiating antennas are high voltage points, and the feed point is the high current point, and the current determines where most of the radiation is going on. So it won't be exactly like the whole thing is a flat thing sitting on the ground or a couple of feet off the ground, but it'll be significantly similar to a lower place antenna than a higher placed one. It's determined mostly by about the first third of the distance of the antenna from the feed point.
Okay, so whether I have the top of the wire at the radiator at 40 feet or 20 feet wouldn't matter much, would you think?
It will help, but it will not be as dramatic as if it was a horizontal straight antenna at that height. But, you know, the more you bring up one end of the antenna, the rest of it kind of goes up as to a degree as well. Yeah. It's not, you would be in kind of deep trouble if it was all determined by, say, the first inch of your feed point. But as I said, it's approximately something like the first one-third. And so, as the antenna goes from feed point to the end of the first third, it goes higher because there's a slope that's involved. So it's better that the other end is high, but it would be a lot better if the whole thing was more horizontal.
Yeah, well, that I can't do. But okay, I'm going to shoot it up there anyway, see if I can get it over the top of the tree. Last time I had a guy climb up the tree and attach it, so I was pretty dismayed when I saw that it was just hanging there after the last snowstorm. So I'll give it a try, and I'll report back, Roy. Thanks. W2BZ.
AP2GS. Well, good luck, Rich. Feel free to come back and tell us how it all turned out.
All right. I could tell now that it's just hanging from a lower tree where the wire broke. I have a lot more noise. So one thing I think will happen when I get it back up at height is that I'd have less noise. I'll give it a try. I think I'm going to try this tomorrow to shoot it up over the tree with fishing wire. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. I've heard people use that technique very successfully. So it hopefully will turn out well. And, yeah, you want something that's resonant. not resident. If it's broken and therefore not really resident, it's not going to be as effective. So I wish you good luck. Okay, thank you very much, Rich, for your participation. Next on my list is Paul, WS2N. What do you have to tell us tonight, Paul?
Ask a question about the system, you know, they have something called Y is X. But before I do that, I just want to say hello to Rich. I haven't spoken to him in, looks like, months. The reason I'm bringing this up is there's an astronomy net that's going to start in Australia, and this group is going to have it where you can check in using this Wise X room thing. But you need Yaesu equipment. You know, it's got the C4 FM deal. Just wondering about that. And it's going to be daytime there is. Nighttime here, so it's totally different time schedule. But maybe somebody might be able to record it, and maybe it'll be played through the internet. Just wondering about it. They're just going to start this. The reason I'm bringing it up, George, our Limark vice president, you know, told me about this. George WB2IKT brought it up, and I was just wondering, how you would go about checking in. I don't have the equipment. I don't plan on buying Yaesu equipment anytime soon, but maybe it else does. But it's a regular astronomy net, and it's pretty good for Australia, considering they did get their first rocket was in an orbital attempt, a few months ago. They're going to try again this year, but they're really going to get into the space program, and they've always been into astronomy. Back to you, Roy. About this Wise X room, you know about that?
Yeah, I know about Wise X rooms. The digital voice formats available primarily for us AMs, it's DMR, it's C-Star, and it's Fusion. So Fusion uses the concept of Wires X. DMR uses Talk Group, and C-Star uses reflectors. Those are just terms of English language. If you had a Fusion radio, Limark does have Fusion radios, repeaters. You could go on those repeaters and you could open up the Wires X room that they're using by touchtone button pressing, and that would establish a connection between a local Fusion repeater and the Fusion repeater gateways. The servers are, I think, all in Japan. So it would connect you with a server through the internet and provide you with the audio stream. But if you don't have a Yaesu type of a Fusion radio, you can't do that. You can theoretically use a hotspot if you had a hotspot. Most likely the Wires X room in question is connected to auxiliary third party. They're not really Wires X rooms because it gets kind of muddy when the third party servers make connections to the Wires X room. They usually call it something else. There are terms for a lot of these parallel server networks that feed hotspots. You can't go from a hotspot directly to a Wires X room or to a talk group or to a reflector. But again, there are a lot of kind of connected third-party servers that you can. But that would require you to have a hotspot, which I assume you don't have a hotspot. Do you?
No hot spot. But, yeah, just I wanted an overall view. Yeah. It sounds good, you know. I mean, this is more than just listening, too. You know, you can check in and talk to the guy, ask questions. So I thought it was interesting. You know, he could wind up with a worldwide group doing it this way. His name is Dr. The PhD astrophysicist, and his call is VK2HSW. So I'm going to look him up. I didn't get a chance to look him up yet. But anyway, thanks for the information, Roy. I thought, well, maybe somebody else has this YSX capability, and they could be up in the middle of the night doing it. I was looking for the time. Oh, here it is. It's, local time, that time, 7:30 p.m. So that's the story on that. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, I mean, it's theoretically possible that in addition to it being Wires X, it might be on Echolink, that particular repeater. You could investigate that. Other than what I just said, if you want to email me as much of the information as you can possibly glean, I'll see if I could hook up something that'll just record in the middle of the night, and I'll send you the MP3. You're not going to be able to have a two-way conversation using that method, but if you're interested, I'm more than willing to give it a try to see if I can figure out a gateway I could get through to record it.
Sounds like fun, and I'll just copy what I have, and I'll send it over to you. Thanks, Roy.
You're welcome. Well, thank you, Paul, for your participation, and I hope I'm able to find a... Almost always, Wires X rooms are coupled to third-party people, because the more the merrier, and you're quite right. There's more than a few nets around that use gateways and such. We used to have someone from the Papa Network over in California come by and say hello occasionally. He runs the Papa Antenna TechNet. So it's probably the last safe place for nets. Where you can get through on a gateway, and so it's a way to expand the possible people listening, and you give nets a little bit longer life, because local nets kind of dry up after many, many, many years. So we'll see what happens. You'll send me the information. I'll look around for other gateways that I might have access to, and if I find one, I'll put it on a timer and record it. I assume it's going to be in the middle of the night, but I'll look up a time zone, figure it out. Very good. So, Wes, what do you got for us tonight?
Let's start in the beginning. Let's start first from... Rectilium. Reticulum. I'm sorry. Reticulum. RN node. You can look at the email, the internet that we invented. So it says there is a quote in this video, I built a reticulum RN node and proved that completely a different radio LoRa and Wi-Fi can communicate through the hardware agnostic network stack. Rectilium wrote traffic about the radio layer automatically bringing the similar frequencies, interfaces, and modulation types. I then run it over a Wi-Fi Halo Haven nodes to create long-range encrypted IP mesh with no traditional infrastructure. Finally, it push it further by running attack demonstrating a fully open source, decentralized communication stack in action, end of quote. But actually, there is one of the forms of it, in form that looks like a walkie-talkie, but it's extremely inexpensive, $35. A little bit more complicated version costs $105, but $35, and you have it one. What it says in the description, let me drop. Okay. But it says in the description that RN node is open, free, and unrestricted digital radio transceiver. It enables anyone to send and receive any kind of data over both short and very long distances. Now, what it says is a cryptographic networking stack, and it could be in any form. It is not really the hardware, although it is the hardware that is shown as if you type RN node, RNOD, so R node, right? But it could be in any form. So it is rather firmware, an installation of the firmware anywhere that could be installed rather than the hardware. But if you don't mind to say your opinion about it, I would appreciate it, because it looks like no more license for ham radio. Back to you.
Not really, because you're not operating on amateur radio frequencies. You're operating at 900 megahertz. That's what LoRa does, and you're using a LoRa transmitter. So it's not amateur radio, and I don't really think, unless you're doing hops, you're getting long range, because these devices, especially the ones at $35, probably doesn't put out more than a watt or two. So you're making the assumption that you have a strong mesh network, which is not easy to do, especially, you know, it's something that doesn't really exist almost anywhere. So you got to start from scratch for most people. And, okay, if you could arrange 100 or 500 people, I guess you could have a relatively wide range. It depends on how many hops it allows. Different mesh networks have different limited hops. Mesh core, I think, has something like 64 hops. But Meshtastic only has about, it defaults, unless you change settings, to about only 3 hops, and then you might be able to bring it up, I think, to 7 or 8 hops. So it's not that magical, and you have to set up a mesh in the first place. Otherwise, it doesn't travel very far.
In relation to what you said, I have a question for you. Actually, it's a quote. It says about the presence of circularity in the naming of the system as whole and the physical devices. So it is RN node contains the seeds necessary to reproduce the system. So RN node bootstrap console is hosting locally RN node. In that, they try to say about lack of limitation. And based on what you say, there is a limitation between.
Yeah, well, like I mentioned earlier, these are low-power radio devices. They all operate on 900 megahertz. So, you know, they have limited range in and of by themselves. The whole point of this technology is to be part of a larger mesh network of a lot of dispersed, there's an optimal density of these nodes where they just hop from one to the next to the next to the next. get into problems when there are multiple nodes, because that can cause congestion of the whole network and cause problems for, you know, other people farther away who are trying to have simultaneous conversations, and your hop is colliding with their data packets and such. So, again, it's an interesting thing. It's based on mesh technology, but it's low power, and you need a significant, you know, and it doesn't scale without the infrastructure. You know, if you got, you know, three guys with a node and you spread them out, at first you'll get a wider network. And then eventually you'll just go beyond the length of a practical node, and it'll just break. Then you'll need to add more nodes to supplement them. So, you know, there are some technical problems. It does not quickly scale up. You know, if you want something quick and dirty, you go to Meshtastic, because it's kind of designed for that use. If you want something bulletproof to a degree, you need to put in a lot of time and effort investing in a network, and that would be Mesh 4, maybe. I'm not that familiar with this particular variation of LoRa-based mesh technology, but, you know, nothing is perfect, and especially when a new technology comes online, there are experimenters, and then there are people who don't want to be bothered. So I'm sure you'll get some excited people who would love to have these nodes, but I think the average guy out there, especially, there's still more than a few that, you know, when you start to bring up the idea of packets and networking and such, it sounds too much like computers to them, and they wouldn't touch it with an NFED for 160 meters. So, yeah. It's interesting. Is it another breakthrough in technology? No, it's a progression, in a long progression of mesh technology that kind of came into its own, with computer networks and have been used by people who tinker. It's not really amateur radio. You'll find that a lot of people who are into this don't have a license and don't have any particular interest in getting a license, because, again, it's available on the ISM frequency band of 900 megahertz, and you don't need a license for that.
Yeah, great, Gene. Actually, Ukraine has started to employ mesh network for their drones, defensive drones operation. So they have those Ukrainian drones from Russia, and just to launch anti-drones, they establishing a mesh network with sensory. But I'm going to get to it when I start to talk about sound. Right now I have a subject, hypersonic electromagnetic gun. That is the title of the email. Hypersonic electromagnetic gun has never been practically employed till Japan installed it on the ship. So that is probably 20 years, I believe. We had a number of American companies, defense industry, trying to develop electromagnetic gun, and they have never been able to make something that could be employed. It was plenty of money spent and plenty of grants given for it. And what has happened is Japan developed that. So Japan developed and tested ship-mounted electromagnetic railgun designed to intercept hypersonic missiles. The system developed by Japan Maritime Self-Defense Force in collaboration with the Acquisition Technology and Logistics Agency. So what they do is interesting. Because I remember from those Americans, Americans experiments, they were trying to fire quite big, but Japanese decided to fire the very, very tiny still projectile. And they were able to get to the speed of Mach 6.5 to Mach 7 using electromagnetic energy instead of chemical propellant. So that is absolutely amazingly crushing power. So first shipboard fire tests were successfully conducted on board of experimental test ships in September 2025 by Japanese, and they started to make a production, really to apply device, and eventually sold it to Americans. Interesting how everything goes. I wonder what is your comment on it. Back to you, Dr. Roy, and to exchange.
Your question?
I think you have a question? Did someone say they have a question? Okay, we'll continue on, and the person with a question, if you have it, we'll hear it, I guess, a little later. I get the idea, Wes, you're discussing what used to be called a railgun.
That is correct.
Okay, yes, we've been working on railguns for a long, long time. It basically is just a series of timed electromagnets, and they pulse on and impart their kinetic energy and speed up the magnetic bullets. I've heard about it. What degree of development, if it's been totally utterly proven? I don't know of any ship that has any of them mounted any place, so I'm not 100% sure if it's been a totally proven technology or, you know, very close to being proven. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, it sounds like a flashy idea. I don't know the practicality. I don't know the energy requirements. I don't know how many times you can fire the thing and under what circumstances and if and when it has any Achilles heel problem where, you know, it isn't self-evident, but, you know, you can't do it, you can't fire it in the rain or something. So I don't know.
Yeah, what caught my attention was that despite they say, well, we're doing it at as a counter hypersonic threat technology for, so they were very interested with using against China, Russia, and North Korea in case it's need for it. But then they said about those darts, tiny darts, with the power of 5 megajoules to 20 megajoules. So then I recalled when I was young, one of my professors gave me that example that if you push with your finger palm of your second hand, you just feel the push. But if you use the same force and you have a needle, that needle will go on the other side of your hand. So it is just concentration of force on the small, very small area. And I was kind of puzzled why Americans who were dealing with this for so many years didn't think about it, and Japanese did it. Back to you.
Well, again, I'm not 100% sure what it is that they've done. I mean, as time goes on, we might figure it out, whether it's practical. I mean, you just have to demonstrate that it's actually being used somewhere and effectively and successfully. But again, if you bring down the surface area with the same amount of force, it has more penetrating. That's kind of law of physics. But again, I don't know if this device, this weapon system, has any gotchas. Most of them do. They sound great on paper, but when you take them out and you war game them, it becomes self-evident that you didn't keep in mind some of the factors. So, might be great. Will it revolutionize military weaponry? I don't think so. Will it be useful? Probably.
The next one is short. We had a quite an unusual winter. It was quite cold. And I sent you the emails sent to both of you so you can comment on its importance that it was for Paul and both Roy. What caught my attention is that there is a material that costs pennies. It's fireproof, mold-proof, gets stronger with age, and could be used. It was used for 600 years already, and the video says illegal in building codes. I've checked that the name of it is Hemcrete, Hemcrete. Hemcrete. Yeah, it's a biocomposite building material. It is allowed in 48 states, but under certain conditions. Do we have something that is fireproof and gives us all of the conditions required for the insulation? Why don't we use it? Back to you, Andrew.
I tend to assume that there are reasons. I've seen this YouTube channel. It seems to be filled with these mildly paranoid stories of wondrous, miraculous materials that were done away with simply because capitalists couldn't make money on it. It seems a kind of simple-minded answer to probably a much more complex set of situations. So, and you're not getting both sides of the story. You're getting an extremely one-sided. So, I passed by the same site, I think, and it was talking about a pain reliever that was used for 40,000 years, and because the pharmaceutical company couldn't make a buck off of it, they had the Food and Drug Administration erase it from reality. My assumption is, if I had the time and the patience to actually review it, I would find out that these questionable medicinal products were laboratory proved not to be effective more than placebo, and so that's probably a more reasonable, less paranoid answer for why it stopped being used. Because there are a lot of naturopathic substances that really have no active substance in them and have been used because your mother gave it to you and she got it from her mother and you got it from her mother. I mean, this is a world where there are bonkers, which for people lucky enough not to know what bonkers are, they're little glasses that you heat up with a candle and you produce a vacuum seal. So the idea is it sucks the poison out of your skin, which doesn't really happen. But I've actually had people come to my office with bonker moths that their Russian grandmothers forced them to undergo to to purge them of their poison. So I don't know. And I don't have the access to all the information, even though this is the age of the Internet. But my BS meter kind of gets pinned by these sites. You know, they all seem to tell the same story that is ever so slightly irrational in basis. But, you know, maybe true. I don't know. I mean, a couple of weeks ago you brought me that story about these heating devices that are all unique, and so they can't be tested, you know, because it was cost prohibitive, because each model was slightly different. So, yeah, that was not the act of a conspiracy. That was the act of a bureaucracy that has regulations that have to be maintained and doesn't allow for special cases.
Yeah, I thought exactly the same. But then I start to think how much is of that video that I just sent you is conspiracy, and how much is is truth. Because definitely, if we have a business, we want to make as much money as we can. And if there is something that is cheaper, that is called hempcrete, and has the same conditions for the insulation, we don't want to advertise it. At least businesses who sell their own product, they don't want to advertise a product of the competitor. Definitely, it is very inexpensive, and it has some features other materials do not have. So, yes, I see application, but why it's not used, I'm not sure. I never heard about anyone using hempcrete. Do you, N2HC?
No. No, but again, I mean, that site, if you go through it, I didn't count how many, but they all seem to be telling the same story, which strikes me as unusual. I mean, a couple of esoteric cases, okay, but I don't know, 40, you know, I mean, the problem is you can go down history lane, and there's a lot of things that are no longer used for all manner of things. I think it was Titus or something. There was a old Roman who actually wrote multi-volume books on the subject of medicinal cures, and 98 or 99% of them were incredibly stupid. But, you know, I mean, over time, bloodletting. Bloodletting was incredibly popular treatment. It ended up probably killing a lot more people than it did anything beneficial to. It's not really good to induce anemia when you have someone who's sick with something entirely different. So there's a lot of regional cures and regional materials that sometimes they didn't even work, sometimes they worked, but they were dangerous. And they faded out of use because the better things were available. And now someone opened up a history book and came up with this thing and probably hasn't tested it, has no idea how it works or what it might do that's detrimental. But it's worth it generating an AI YouTube that he could make some AdSense with. So I don't take YouTube as a 100% accurate assessment. Unfortunately, it kind of depends on the subject. I've noticed, unfortunately, that amateur radio-related channels have a real hit or miss. You know, maybe about 60% of them are legit, and 40% of them are any range from slightly wrong to incredibly wrong. So, you know, I don't imbue them with any credentials. So, especially, you know, nowadays you plug it into a website's AI, and it looks semi-professional. You can run a program where it will simulate two human beings having a discussion on a subject. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to make any sense or be at all true. So it's very easy